Chapter 9. My hungry stomach woke me up early the next morning. The sky was just beginning to glow when I sat up in my bed, my head still spinning with what happened at the store. Who robbed Mr. Graham? Those familiar eyes still haunted me. After a quick shower, I raced out of my house to get breakfast at Bluford. This time, I got there earlier and used a different hallway to get to the cafeteria, anything to avoid Cindy. After the awkward way she left me in the hall, I didn't want to see her. I couldn't handle her and her friends looking down at me. It hurt too much. The cafeteria at Bluford was half full when I got there. I moved through the line quickly and grabbed my plate. Breakfast was two spongy pieces of French toast and a greasy slab of sausage. As hungry as I was, it made my mouth water. I took my tray and headed out to find a seat when I saw Tyree. He was alone at a nearby table with his own plate of French toast. I couldn't believe it. "What's up?" I said, feeling a little strange. In the weeks we'd eaten lunch together, he was always the quiet one at our table. "I didn't know you came here." "I didn't know you did either," he replied and then gulped down some orange juice. "Guess we all got our secrets, huh?" he added mysteriously. "What do you mean?" He looked at me for a few seconds as if he was sizing me up. "You still playing half court with that stepdad of yours?" he asked. I knew what he meant. "That's none of your business," I snapped back. "I'm just being real, bro. Everybody knows what you're going through. It don't take no genius to see it," Tyree said. It was the most I'd ever heard him say. "I know lots of people try to get in your face and find out your business. Most of them don't know what they're talking about. But Mr. Mitchell does. If you really gotta talk to someone, talk to him. Trust me, I know." "Why are you telling me this?" I asked. "My dad used to play half court with me," he said, swallowing the last of his food and getting up. He left the cafeteria without a word. I was speechless. In English, Mr. Mitchell gave us a pop quiz on the first section of narrative on the life of Frederick Douglass. I hadn't even started reading the book. For the first time since sixth grade, I was way behind in school, especially in Mr. Mitchell's class. No one knew why I couldn't focus on school, and I couldn't tell them the truth. That would make things worse for Mom and me. Instead, I tried my best on the quiz, but I felt my stomach sinking when I handed it in with 4 blank answers out of 10. When class ended, Mr. Mitchell asked to speak to me. "What's going on, Ben?" he asked. My quiz was on top of his desk with a score of 50. "We both know you can do better than this." "Sorry, Mr. Mitchell," I said, hoping he would just let it go. "I forgot to read that section." Mr. Mitchell studied me closely. He wasn't happy with my answer, but his eyes weren't angry. They were worried. "You seem to be forgetting a lot these days, Ben," he said, flipping through his grade book. "Your grades keep slipping, and you seem really distracted lately. I'm concerned about you, and I'm not alone. Is everything okay at home?" I had to push back the sudden tears I felt in my eyes. I prayed he didn't see them. "Everything's cool, just a bad quiz, that's all. No big deal," I replied quickly, escaping toward the door. Mr. Mitchell shook his head. I could tell he didn't believe me. "I'll do better on my next one, you'll see," I said. Just then a group of students from his next class entered the classroom. I was grateful to see them. "I gotta go," I said, rushing into the hallway. After my last class, I stopped at my locker to drop off my books when I heard someone call my name. I turned to see Cindy. She looked nervous. "Ben, are you okay?" she asked. "I just heard about what happened at Graham's last night. That's so scary." "You sure you want to be talking to me? What if your friends see you? I got free breakfast, remember?" I said the words extra loud, shutting my locker with a loud crash. "Ben, I didn't mean to..." "To what?" I challenged. "You didn't mean to make me feel like trash in front of all the cheerleaders? Is that it?" "Ben, I'm so sorry." "Look, Cindy, I don't need your apology. And I don't need you feeling sorry for me. Unless you got something else to say, there's nothing for us to talk about." Cindy looked hurt. I almost felt bad for her, but I couldn't stop. There was just too much pain inside, even though most of it wasn't her fault. She started to walk away, but then she stopped herself and came back to me. "What are you doing Saturday?" she asked. "Huh?" "Jamie's having a little party at her house, and I want to go there with you. That's why I came here," she said, nearly knocking me over. "Girl, don't play with me. I'm not your charity case," I said, ready to leave her there in the hallway. "No, it's not like that," she yelled. "I was about to ask you 3 days ago, but I just got too nervous. Then the whole thing happened yesterday in the hallway, and I didn't know what to do. I freaked out because I was afraid I'd ruined everything. That's not what I want." I didn't know whether to believe her. She was close to me, and I could smell her sweet perfume and see she meant what she said. Part of me wanted to tell her why I was really upset, but I couldn't. It was all too much, too close. "Girl, I'm sorry, I gotta go. Let's talk about this later," I said. Cindy's eyes glimmered for a split second, as if there were tears in them. "Listen, Ben, I can understand if you're mad, but don't think I was looking down at you," she said. "If you knew about my life, you'd understand I have no room to look down on anyone." "I'll catch up with you later," I replied, heading outside. I had to get away. There was only one person I could stand to see. I made the 20-block walk to City General Hospital. When I found room 424, Mr. Graham was lying in bed wearing a blue hospital gown. He had tubes hooked to his arm, and a small screen at his side showed how fast his heart was beating. He looked smaller than I remembered, and older too. Seeing him, I felt a sad knot in my chest. "Hey, Mr. Graham," I said, "how are you feeling?" "Better today, Ben," he replied with a big smile. His eyes were alert again, but tired. "Come on in. Sit down for a while." He pointed to a chair at the foot of his bed. "They tell me you handled yourself real well after that fellow left the store." I didn't feel I did anything special. I wish I could have stopped the whole thing somehow.
"I'm just glad you're okay," I admitted.
"Don't you be worrying about me, Ben. It'll take more than this to keep me down," he said, as if his heart attack was no big deal. "Besides, I can see you got your own things to think about right now." I could feel him looking at me, but I didn't dare look back. Outside, the afternoon sun was beginning to cast long shadows. Mr. Graham broke the silence. "I remember one day when I was about 5 or 6, he said. "There was this rain coming down, something fierce. All of a sudden, the sun broke through the clouds and a rainbow appeared. An older boy told me there was a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, and do you know, I believed him. I went running off barefoot through puddles and across fields trying to reach it, but with each step I took, that rainbow moved further away. For years, I lived my life that way, thinking the pot of gold was just around the corner and I'd scoop it up and be on Easy Street. But I was just dreaming," he continued. "After I got out of the service and met my wife, rest her soul, I got my head out of the clouds. That's when I stopped being a dreamer and started being a doer. I decided to open a little store that would be of value in the neighborhood. Instead of dreaming about it, I made it happen. That's what you need to remember, son. You got to make things happen." His voice had grown stronger as he talked. When I finally looked up at him, he was focused on me, kindness in his eyes. "And you know what else, Ben?" he added with a friendly smile. "That's what you're going to do one day. I know it. These old bones don't lie." Make things happen. Mr. Graham's words kept echoing in my head as I made the long walk back home. They didn't seem to fit me. I couldn't seem to make anything happen. At home, I was just trying to stay out of the way, and at school, I was barely scraping by. Now, with Mr. Graham in the hospital, I didn't even have a job. Make things happen. How? I wanted to say, frustrated at the new voice in my head. On my way home, I passed by Graham's store. It looked strange with all the lights out and the closed sign hanging inside the door. I stopped for a moment, my mind flashing with memories of what happened the day before. In my head,
I could see the large man with the knife in his hand. I could hear him threatening Mr. Graham again. I could see his eyes glance at me for a split second. Was there fear in them? It hit me then. The eyes. I had seen them before. It all made sense. Make things happen, the voice urged me again. This time I had an idea. When I walked into the house, I knew I had a dangerous game to play. Larry was in his chair finishing off a beer. His head was tilted way back so he could gulp down the last drops. "Where's Mom?" I said. It was almost 7 o'clock, and she should have been home for at least an hour. He belched and then looked at me. "She's upstairs taking a rest," he said. I knew what that meant. He'd hit her again, probably just minutes ago while I was walking home. My blood began to boil. It was the same as every day, but this time I didn't run up the steps. I just stared at him. He glared back with a sneer on his face. I could see his anger building, but so was mine. "What kind of man are you?" I said, "beating up on a woman and a kid." He jumped out of his chair and shoved me against the living room wall with a loud thud. Before I could move, he was in my face. I could see the veins in his neck pounding. "You feeling brave, Benny boy? It's about time you had a real lesson. I've been looking forward to this for a while now," he growled. But for once, I didn't feel helpless. "I ain't scared, Larry," I snapped. "But you should be, since I might know who robbed Graham's." Larry froze. I could see his mind racing. "It was your boy Donald, wasn't it? I'm guessing you told him when to show up. Only neither of you knew I was working late. I'm thinking maybe I should tell the cops," I threatened. I watched his face carefully for clues. His bloodshot eyes were already filled with anger, but there was something else in them for a split second, a flash of fear. "Boy, you don't know nothing," he roared, his face inches from mine, his spit flying in the air, his stinking breath filling my nostrils. He started hitting me then, his fist slamming into my chest and stomach. One punch landed deep in my gut, knocking the air right out of my lungs. Another shot crashed into my ribs. I heard a crunching sound and felt a stab of pain shoot into my side. I put my hands over my head, but I couldn't stop the rain of punches. "You're just blowing smoke, Benny boy. But if you get the law on me with your crazy idea, you and your mom gonna be in more trouble than you can dream about. You hear me?" I couldn't even speak. I just shook my head yes. "That's what I thought," Larry said with a wicked grin. "I got some news for you, too. Your mom and I don't like this neighborhood. We're moving this weekend over to the south side. You can forget all about your buddy Graham. Starting next week, you'll be in another school." My legs were weak, and I was still gasping for air, but his words hit me hard. "Now get out of my sight," he ordered, shoving me toward the steps. Hours later in my room, I stared at the ceiling, watching the shadows racing by with each car that passed outside. My side ached whenever I moved, and all the muscles in my stomach were bruised and sore, but inside I hurt more. Larry was going to rip Mom and me away from everything again. My new friends would be gone. Mr. Graham and Alice, my new family, would be gone too. No more Mr. Mitchell. No more Bluford. Just a world of pain, nothing more. Next to my bed was my copy of the narrative of the life of Frederick Douglass. I remembered my failed quiz and how I told Mr. Mitchell I'd read the book. Now it didn't matter. Nothing did. I flipped the pages anyway, my eyes catching on a single sentence. My natural resilience was crushed. My intellect weakened. My desire to read vanished, and the cheerful spark in my eye died away. Tears rolled down my face at the words. They described me.